Welcome to the Hudson Area Library. A lot of you know that we have a local history speaker series about once a month, and we're very pleased this month to be co-sponsoring an event with SBK Social Justice Center.
Woo!
And and they have a series called Barbershop Talks. So we're combining those two tonight, and we have a lot of people here. We're going to be talking about the history of the Black community in Hudson, and we have a panel of people who will be speaking, and we're also really hoping that people here who have comments or questions or information that they could add will also add to this. I think that's somewhat what the barbershop talks are like. So I'm going to give you some announcements with Shanika McIntosh.
Yay!
She's our youth services person and also works in programming. And I'm Brenda Schufeld, I'm the program director. Our first announcement. So our next local history speaker series at the library is called Hold It Still. Libelers, Monsters, and Rebels, the Jacob Leisler Institute and Research into New York's Neglected English Colonial Period. And if any of you don't know, we have a wonderful history institute that looks into the origins of Dutch history in the local area, and this talk will be by David William Voorhees. So we're very excited about that. It's Thursday, February 22nd at 6 p.m. And then Shanika and I are going to...
We have one copy of this, so...
No, we have a lot. Don't listen. No, we have a lot.
So, we're really excited and really want to thank all of you, we think you all voted, and the people of Hudson who voted for our community-based funding initiative this past November. Because of your overwhelming support of Hudson, we can say that we will be open 7 days a week starting this Sunday. Having a 7-day-a-week party in the library, quiet party. Okay. We will be kicking off our new story time with Pamela Badilla, which will be happening at 1 p.m. Folk Tales with Pamela. We will also be you can get your photo taken. We're doing a lot. Brenda likes to. Because of a lot of work by the history room volunteers, we were able to collect 100-year history of the Hudson High School yearbooks that we now have in our history room
every year,
and we will be having a photographer available for you to be able to take a photo with either your high school self or your distant relative, and all you have to do is email us and you'll find your relative or your past self, and you'll be able to take a professional photo with it. And that's a free service that we'll be doing from 1 to 4 p.m. Oh, yeah, then we have a bassoon trio, North Winds. They'll be performing from 4 to 5:30 to in the library. And we'll have cookies. From the Friends of the Hudson Area Library, they will be providing us with cookies and treats. Also, some of you may not know this, but Frederick Douglass's birthday is Valentine's Day. This is when he chose to celebrate it because he didn't know when his actual birthday was. It's a 200th birthday for Frederick Douglass. So we will be having a birthday celebration with Lena Mosley of Operation Unite. There'll be stories, activities, and music. This is good for toddlers and adults, and we'll also have a birthday cake with an image in front of us, which I'm really excited. Yes, there'll be cake.
And it's for ages 7 to 12 and families. And how old are you? You don't want to say? You could come.
Six.
You
could come. We also have just started a nonfiction book group. It met for the first time last month. Next month will be The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. They'll be meeting in March, and we just want people to know that if they would like to join, it's open, and so you have time to read the book. And then we are doing an Audre Lorde reading and discussion series.
Yeah.
Audre Lorde was a very special person, poet, librarian, and she will be reading her work with a facilitated discussion group. We also have a film screening, a free one, the week before. It's about her Berlin years, time she spent in Berlin from 1984 to 1992. It's really exciting. It's actually going to be screening at BAM 3 days before. Wow. We're gonna be able to show it, but we have it. So that's really exciting, and that's free. And anyway, this is just some of the stuff that we are up to, and there'll be more to come, especially in the summer. We're really excited, and thank you guys all so much for supporting us as we continue on our mission to support you all.
You have a question?
How old are you?
I always feel like I should say that I'm older so people go, you look good. I'm 57 years old. No one's allowed to laugh at how old I am. We're here partly because of the history room that's associated with the library, and it's a very important part of our library. It covers the local history of the city of Hudson and also somewhat Columbia County. And we have very dedicated volunteers, including John Craig, who's here tonight. And we have many open hours. We've expanded the hours that we're open because we have more volunteers. Some of you may not know, if you have any questions about history, the history of your building, or something that you have a burning question about, why is that street named that, you can fill out a history request form, and it's a free service that we do for the patrons. So you're welcome to do that. You can find the form online, you can fill it out and send it to us online, or you can come in person, meet with the volunteers, and they really do fulfill those requests. We also are very interested in having more volunteers, and particularly because of tonight's topic, we would like to recruit volunteers that would show more diversity on our committee. So please do think about that if you're a person who has interest in local history. And let's see. Okay, so we are ready to begin. I'm going to introduce to you the person who made tonight is responsible for making tonight possible, Quentin Cross. He's a long time resident of Hudson. He's the co-founder of SBK Social Justice Center. He has always been active in his community. It's very important to him. And as I've gotten to know him a little bit more from this event, he has a big feeling about the history of the Black community in Hudson and having that history preserved and known. So this has been a great experience for me also. He holds a BS in Public Affairs from SUNY Empire State College. He's also the recipient of the SUNY Graduate Diversity Fellowship, and he's currently pursuing a master's degree in work and policy studies. He's the proud father of 10-year-old twin daughters. Quentin.
Thank you all for coming out. What do I want to say? First, I want to recognize a couple of people first. I want to recognize another co-founder of SBK, my brother, Vern Cross, who is here. Our long-standing chairman of the board, Alan Scarra, who's here. chapter of Showing Up for Racial Justice for the child care. Thank you so much. Rebecca, another former board member of SPK. We started in the barbershop. We're going on our sixth year. Started in the barbershop. And the first thing we did publicly was start a radio show. This was Barbershop Talks. And we're like going into our sixth year, and then, you know, Facebook shows all the pictures start showing up on your feed or what have you. So how we started when we mobilized and stormed City Hall, they said, to advocate for you. That was our first action. And we're here today. And we're here today to basically honor some people from our community. Because oftentimes we don't hear those stories. We hear, you know, when we came to Hudson, it was nothing. Well, some of us was here. Maybe Riley. But we thank you so much for coming out. I get to introduce the current president and boss of SBK. This is a bittersweet moment for me because this is my last event. I'm like 1 month away from moving to Philadelphia. So I'm happy. But without further ado, I want to introduce our president and chairwoman of our board, someone who is dedicated, committed, a fighter for the community, someone who stands alone many times when nobody stands with her, but she's there. Someone who like values the input of those who have been marginalized in the press and just takes that and moves it forward. A fierce woman, a fierce black woman, a fierce black Latina woman, the Honorable Tiffany Garrigan.
To see all these faces here tonight, and I'm more than happy to honor these two lovely women on stage. Oh my God, I'm ready to cry. Oh my goodness. I have the privilege of knowing these two women for as long as I've been in Hudson, and I've been here since 1999. And when I met these two women right here, being a stranger, it was open arms and welcome. And it was like, I'm from New York City, so when I came up here, it was like, these are the rules of Hudson, young lady. You know, this is how we do. And I had to learn that, you know, because I'm in a different city. And I'm very proud and honored to learn those rules and to be a part of what I call them my family, because they are two beautiful women and they have children and grandchildren in this community. And we all have a story because we all came to Hudson in a different way, on a different road, different path, and we are here. And one thing that we're doing here in the city of Hudson is learning how to be that community that is a one Hudson. And that's what we need to be. And with further ado, I want to start off by introducing Ms. Emma Roberts. And Ms. Toni Cross. And when we start off, I would like to ask, I'm going to give you two the mic, but I would like to ask you two women to tell your story of how you came to Hudson and how it is so different from when you came here and what it is today and the opportunities that were here in the city when you all came to Hudson, and we are here now. Neither. So without further ado.
Good afternoon. My name is Emma Roberts, and I came to Hudson in 1963 from West Haven, Florida. So I've been here for 55 years. I came up with five kids. kids. My husband was here for a year before I moved, and I came up with 5 kids. And when I got here and got out the car, I was crying. My kids was crying because I didn't know nobody. But the first family that I met was Gaynell Butler, and that was through one of my younger kids that left the house, and I didn't know where she was, and I got so scared, and I went walking down the street, and I found Boosie, Gaynell's daughter, was on the step. And I said, did you see Annette? She said, she's upstairs. And that's how I met Gaynell. So then I moved out to North Front Street, and I met a lovely family, Mrs. Mary Wood. Her name was Wood at that time. And then I also met, there was a place called The Rock. I'd never been there but The Rock. And Juanita Carr and Jill Carr, I met them. They used to walk past the house all the time, very friendly people. And then later on, I got burned out. I lost everything. And the Red Cross moved me up to 5th Street, 5th and 4th, where the red dot along there. And that's where I met Jesse Morrison and Faye Lott. We became friends. So I stayed there for like 6 months, and then I moved back down Front Street, but it was South Front Street. And I met Mr. and Mrs. J.C. Watson, and Beauty and I became friends. And across the street with the Hugheses. Now you're talking about a very close-knit family. The Hugheses was a very close-knitted family. And you talk about cooking, oh, Lord, they can cook and still cooking. And then further down was Liz Hunter. And I also met at my church, at John Shallow Baptist Church, under the direction of Reverend Wrigley. And I was there until Reverend Ronald Grant, who'd been there for 23 years. So I've been very active in Shallow. I sang in a choir, I do anything they want me to do. And I also met the Fultons. Now, there's a lady that I love, so she passed away, Sister Hazen Murray. Yes. I worked with her. She would do catering for the trips on the river, and she did the Black Festival. I helped her doing that. And she also did Flag Day. And I said to Hazen House every day, she'll call me, Emma, what you doing? I said, oh, Hazen, I'm tired. Come on down, I want you to make me some potato salad. I love your potato salad. So I became very close to Hazel up until she passed. And so what I'm saying is I met a lot of people, a lot of good families, but I can't remember their names. But that's how I got to Hudson, by my husband. And I'm kind of nervous. They all graduated except one from Hudson High. Wow. I'm the grandmother of 28. So it was hard for me to get used to Hudson. But like I say, I love Hudson. But like I say, yes, Hudson have changed. But one thing that cannot change is my memory of Hudson.
Can you tell us your story, Ms. Cole?
Columbia Street. It's just a lot right now because there's no house there anymore. And we lived there until I was 12, and then we moved down to 15 North First Street, which was right around the corner from the Hudson Youth Center, where most of us lived at when we weren't home. Yes. And then from there, we moved to 22 North 2nd Street, which is now a building. It's right across the street from Providence Hall, on that corner going up. And we lived there, oh gosh, I lived there until 1975, when I moved into the high rise. It was me, my two oldest children, and my third child was on the way. And lived in the high rise for 26 years. Until I finally saw fit, and God blessed me with my own home. It was very strange for feeling when Quentin asked me to do this, because when I think of history, I think of older people. And then I realized, that's what it is. I mean, I think that was the realization. I've stepped over into that category as being an older person. Hudson's much different than it was when I was growing up. When I was growing up, parents, you stayed where you were supposed to stay. I was 16 years old and got lost in the city of Hudson. And I was only up on Union Street over by the baseball diamond. I was so scared. I really was so scared. My sister-in-law was like, "You have anything to be scared of? All you got to do is turn around and go back and sit down." But my parents did not allow me to go past either corner of the block that you lived in. You were allowed. I lived on Columbia Street between 2nd and 3rd. That's as far as I could go. And that's as far as I went. Because if I went any further, somebody was going to tell on me. So I didn't do that. And then on top of that, we lived on Columbia Street. I could go to Columbia and 3rd, but I couldn't cross the street. My father said, no, you stayed there, and you didn't go across the street. IGA was not IGA, it was Tony's, and it was on the other side of the street. Okay, so I could go to the store. That's as far as I could go. I remember at one time, I got some money. I must have been about 6 or 7 years old, and I wanted some candy. And there was a store down across the street from where the church is now, Shiloh is now. It's called Ted's. I asked my mother, could I get some candy? And she said, "No, wait till your brothers come." You know, sometimes you get stupid and be disobedient. I took the money off the item board, so I would go into the store anyway. I knew how to go to Ted's. I went all the way down from 2nd all the way down the front. I got my candy, and at that time, my mother had my brother looking for me. They couldn't find me, but they found Patty Carr. And they said, "Did you see my sister?" "Oh, she's right downstairs." Patty has gone on to be with the Lord, but from that point on to the day she died, I called her Fat Patty because she told on me. I got home. My mother took my candy. She whooped my butt. Told me to go to bed, and I bet not go to sleep. Now, how can you do that? So I never did that type of thing. So that's probably why I got lost when I was 16, because I knew that. We had so many factories, we had so many stores. I take my great-grandchildren now up Warren Street, and I'll say, "Did you know we had this here, this that was there? Remember Finkelstein's?" And we used to call her Old Lady Finkelstein's. There was Sammy Lish's down on the corner of 1st and Warren. My brothers, they shoveled snow for them. That's how we made money when we was a kid, between shoveling snow and having a shoeshine box. Yeah. All the boys had shoeshine boxes. Yeah. And because I had 4 brothers older than me, and I wanted to be accepted, because most of the time you were told you can't go, you're a girl. I wanted to do what they learned, so I learned how to shine shoes just as good as them. So they were never take me so you could make your money. There was just so much more in Hudson. We had the youth center, but we also had the YWCA. Every day I was at the YWCA during the week, except for Monday. I was at the Presbyterian Church for Girl Scouts. There was something for you to do as you got older. When you got older, there was the Blue Anchor. There was always something for us young people to do. Blue Anchor was a place where teenagers hung out. There was jukeboxes, I mean, that's what they called them at the time. There was jukeboxes, and there was mostly athletes hung out there. And that's where guys went to meet girls. You had the boys' club. It was not the boys' and girls' club. It was the boys' club, and they let you know it wasn't for us. Somewhere along the line, they started letting the girls come on Saturday mornings for like 2 hours. That was it. It was the boys' club. So there's a lot more in Hudson to do. We had the glue factory down by the train station. And that place stuck. You knew it was down. If you came up a little bit further, there was Franklin Park. We lived at Franklin Park during the time that we were kids. Got up, my mother got us up. We got on the city bus. We had a real bus, not really. We had a real bus. And we got on that bus. The bus driver, he would take us down to Franklin Park and take my mother to work. And we stayed at Franklin Park all day. Mommy would get home at 4, at 3:30. The person who was running the park would say, it's 3:30, you need to get ready to go home so you reach an open home. Huh. And that's what you did. You didn't have a whole bunch of babysitters during the summer because your babysitter was the park. And they had so many parks. You had Franklin Park, you had Charles Williams, you had St. Mary's, you had Oakdale, and you had Academy Hill. Did I miss it? I think that was it. We had those parks, and you went to one by where you lived at. But then at the end of the summer, they'd have field day, and there would be tournaments. And there would be a boy of the year and a girl of the year. Everybody fought to try to win to be boy or girl of the year because you got a bicycle. But while they were having these tournaments, after the tournament, they had hot dogs and hamburgers and ice cream and soda. And then you came back in the evening so they could give the awards to the people that got the tournaments, and there were fireworks. There were fireworks. And we look forward to them. I know every kid looked forward to them. Did one of your sisters or brothers become girl or boy?
We had that also in our time. I remember that.
So we were very active with that. Thursday night was the night. Because everybody got paid on Thursdays. And everybody in the store stayed open late. And it was a big thing to go to J.J. Newberry's and sit at the counter and order something. That was the big thing. You got to do your shopping. You got to meet your friends. It was just wonderful. Thursday night. Thursday night was the night, but that was pay night. Now, I think everybody worked. I don't think there was anybody that was working. I mean, not that there's nothing wrong with public assistance, but I don't think I know nobody that was on public assistance because what was taught was you get a job. If you got to go clean toilets, you get a job. That's what was taught. And those of us that might have needed it, because I know at one time I did, and I couldn't do it because my father was off. You ain't gonna take no charity. And that's what they believed it was. And there's nothing wrong with that belief because it made me go out and get a job.
We're gonna take some questions from the audience in just a minute. I just wanted to recognize some elected officials that are here. We have in the back, please stand up, our Assemblywoman Dee Dee Barrett. I didn't see the mayor of Hudson here. Okay. And we also have our common council president of the city of Hudson Council, Tom DiBiase.
our Hudson City judge and also track coach. Please stand up. For the audience, but I wanted you to think about the more of the job opportunities that were here, and because when you started your story, Ms. Emma, you said your husband was here already, so maybe he came up because it was a job opportunity, and then your family came up, so I'd like you guys to think about that while I take a question from the audience. Okay, please stand and speak loudly.
My great grandmother came up and worked in Newton Hook on the brickyard. She had like a rooming house, and then that brought my grandmother and my mom up. And then from Maryland and Washington, D.C., my father, he came up here from North Carolina. I don't know how he got up here, but he got up here. That's all I know. But there was work here. There wasn't work where they were. That's why they came up here.
Please stand. Talking about the Jim Crow era, and is that one of maybe a reason why your family or your husband came up from the South?
No, my husband he was a migrant worker. That's how he got to New York, and then after the season, right, he got a job, and that's when he sent for me. So, you know, he was working at Red Hook, I think. And after that, he started with cement plant.
You know about the CC Club?
The Who Club? Members of the CC Club. I still was trying to figure out what the CC meant. It was Colored Citizens. But by the time I was born, we weren't called colored, so I didn't understand that. But the CC Club was a place that the blacks hung out at. My father would come from work and then go work at the CC Club. They hooked up with the Women's Progressive Club. It came out of the CC Club, and that they did a lot of work with the young people. They donated for like scholarships and stuff like that. They would have dances to raise money. They were a big part of starting the Black American Festival, because the first one came out from the CC Club. Because I remember when they were up there, the mayor was talking, and then they sang what is the Negro National Anthem. I didn't know it. And I remember saying, well, how come we got a Negro National Anthem and we don't know it? Here, I've been here all my life. I didn't know it, but I made sure I learned it from that day on. But because they've been teaching in school, so why would I know it? But CC Club, it went on for a while, and then they built that new building, and it still went on. But I don't think the younger people had the same feeling toward it that the older. Those older people that started it, they had big feeling for it. They even, I think the last I knew, we had bricks. My father brought bricks in our name to build the new building, in his children's name. So it really meant something to them.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Colored Citizens.
Yes.
Isn't that something that for us living here in America, we have to have a place to feel comfortable to stay colored citizens?
Yeah.
For people that look like us, look like me, look like you, walking around the community in a new place, in a new city, and you want to meet everyone. But you also want to meet your people. And that's a beautiful thing, you know, because if you're coming from someplace, another city, another state, and you're lost, you know, you want to know where are the people, what do they do, where do they hang out, where are the jobs, where is the housing? Wonderful. Any more questions?
I want to say a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it.
Come on.
Cemetery in here in Hudson. I'm even proud of that they died here and that they're buried here. I came to Hudson as a child. Early in life, picking cherries in the cherry orchards around the community in Columbia County. Maybe single digit, 9, 10 years old. We'd be picked up in the morning, we'd go out in the cherry orchards, and we'd pick cherries for 35 cents a box like that.
Wow.
But for a 9 or 10 year old, that was pretty good money. My mother, being the smart woman that she was, got the hell out of Hudson when she finished high school. And she moved to Brooklyn, where she met my father, who was from Pennsylvania. but brought me back to Hudson to visit my grandparents and my aunts and uncles who lived here. Then I became involved in the community of Hudson and had many, many close friends that I grew up with. This woman in the back mentioned Mildred Hines. Well, Mildred Hines' son, many of you may not know, was Leonard Wise. Leonard Wise is the fellow who wrote a book, several books, one of which was made into a film that many of you, I'm sure, have seen. Because I'm 81, I don't remember the name of the damn film. Does anybody remember the name of the movie that Lenny made? Anyway, yeah. One of the things, you can't either. Let's see. Speaking of which, there's no woman I revere as an icon of the black community in Hudson but this woman here. There may be more, there may be others, but as far as I'm concerned, in my personal opinion, that's the icon of the black community of Hudson. In terms of role modeling and leadership and integrity and dignity, that's her. There certainly are others, but I've known her the longest of all. I want to say also that my uncle, Edward Cannon, who was born in Hudson, was a member of the 761st Tank Battalion, who kicked ass in Germany during World War II. General Patton sent my uncle and this Black Panther 761st all-black soldiers, tank battalion, ahead of him and his Pearl Harbor guns he kept in his pocket. And they whipped the Germans and made the path for the rest of the army to come in and deal with the Germans there. They had the experience of when they captured, because my uncle was an officer, they captured these German officers and they were transporting them from the places where they, you know, kept them captive. The black soldiers rode in the back of the train while the white German krauts were in the front of the damn train. So, you know, you folks wonder why black people are so angry and have so much age, whether it's in Hudson, New York. It's because of the institutions we have to deal with. We don't mind stupid bigotry. We don't care about this asshole who thinks they're all lazy and blah, blah, blah. We do care about the institutions, health, education, and welfare. It was people who live here of color have been oppressed for so many years, as long as I can remember. The last thing I want to say was my grandmother, Frances Cannon, was the mother of the first Shiloh Baptist Church, and my grandfather, Alan Cannon, was one of the persons who laid the cornerstone for the first Shiloh Baptist Church. So let me tell you, I'm old now, I've had my effort at trying to make a contribution mostly to people with mental illness in Columbia County. That's what I have done for 53 years. So, you know, I'm old, I'm not moving so well, but when you have a get-together like this, I think people need to know exactly how the history of this community has evolved over the years. Many people who came here, like this family, were here for a long time. There were jobs here, there were farms, and people came here from the south. They came in the summertime, they worked in the farms, they went back south, and came back the following year. Then they began to come and stay. They began to come and stay at the same time. The institutions, the industries that were here, the cement factories and the other factories, began closing down. So people who came to migrate as farm workers and brought a better life for them was here in Columbia County, found that once they got here, the economy here began to decrease and decrease. Left people who came here with hope of leaving the South, where they were very oppressed, for a better life in the North, okay, and found jobs wanting here. And they became the population, because like she said, people back in them days, our parents and grandparents, they didn't do their damn welfare. They all worked. There were factories and other kinds of things, cement plants. And there were two-parent families.
That's right.
Two-parent families. There were no one-parent mother with five or six children on welfare. There were two-parent families. I knew every alcoholic in Hudson. Yeah, poor old drunk-ass Harry. That's Billy over there. We knew them all. So I just wanted to let you know there's a history here that I pay more attention to, and I wanted to share some of it with you. And a lot more I could talk about. But I felt like I just had to come up and say there were very few things to let you know that the black community, as far as I'm concerned, is a very, very special community here. I have lived and experienced them. They're willing to survive ongoing institutional oppression has been a part of my own personal survival. And I survived in Brooklyn, Queens, etc. But a lot of what I was able to garner from my own energy and strength and fortitude came from my experiences in Hudson. How me and my friends, many of them, which are gone now, okay, never saw ourselves as less than anybody. You badass, let's play some ball and see what real badasses are. I'm telling you now, we was the badasses. When you can excel that way, it gives you a sense of strength and power, even though you recognize that there were institutions who oppress you. But most of my friends, once they matured, finished high school, they got out of here. They left here. They aren't here anymore. Only a very few. So I've been telling the same things. There he is. He and I met about 2 months ago. We decided we were going to start an organization. And the organization was going to be, how are we going to help our young people? And we thought what we would do, Eli and I, is start a group that said, this is an organization whose goal is about get the hell out of Hudson.
Well, I'm not going to disrespect myself.
You sure agree. You agree. Yeah, man. That's awesome.
So I wanted to ask you two ladies, you know, when you were telling your stories about how you was walking around and got lost, and how when you got here and you was walking around and you met friends, can you tell everyone, like, what was the dynamics of Hudson back then? Because right now, we're in an era of Black Lives Matter, you know, where people of color are fighting against police brutality and things of that nature today. You know, can you tell us what it was back then in Hudson?
Well,
Well, to me, it wasn't as bad in the 60s like it is now. It wasn't, can you describe it? I mean, it might have been, but I didn't see it. Okay, that's all I can say.
It wasn't anything like it is now. Everybody cared about everybody. When I said I didn't go off the block because somebody would tell it, they would tell it. You didn't go off the block. Your neighbor was just as much your mother as your mother was. Your neighbor was just as much your father as your father was. There was nobody. You respected adults all the time, even to the bums in the alley.
That's right.
Mr. X.
That's right.
Okay, it was Mr. X. Yeah. And he'd be just as drunk as a cook. With a bottle of silver satin in his hand, but you better not disrespect him because he was an adult.
Yeah, right.
My mother would leave us in the yard and tell them, I'm going to the store. Could you look out for my kids? The bums in the alley. But now we don't want nobody to say anything to our kids. If somebody's kid was fighting, somebody else could come out and say, wait a minute, y'all stop that stuff. Don't let me call your mother. Lady saw me up the street. I was like four houses from my house. And I was chasing this boy up the street because he had hit me. She didn't care why I was up there. She said, you better get down the street before I call Bernice. Well, guess what? I turned around to go down the street and she had called Bernice. And I'll never forget it because I had to stay around the corner for the whole summer. You can't listen. It wasn't nothing around the corner on my block. Everybody played up front. So, yeah, things are a lot different. If you saw somebody hungry, you fed them. It didn't matter. It didn't matter who they were, what color they were. You didn't even have to like them, but if they was hungry, you still fed them. So that's different now. But it's not different in me because I can't help it. What my mother put in me is still in me. It ain't going anywhere. Places to work. If somebody didn't have a job and I knew about a job, I was supposed to tell them.
Right.
You didn't mind co-signing that type of thing. Now you don't want to give nobody a reference so they can mess up your name. But back then you would.
Yeah.
So it was a big, 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 big difference than what it was. Now I'm kind of leery about my babies walking the street without an adult. We could go to the store after we got a certain age, we could go to the store by ourselves. Oh, not now. I don't care if it's daylight or nighttime. Because they don't care. So some of it, the breakdown has come from not having the two-parent households.
Yes.
That there's no man there to say, wait a minute, because we all, whether we want to admit it or not, little girls need to have a man say, you
Amen.
Do good. My dad would come in the morning, I'd get up, he'd say, you can't walk around here in your pajamas. You got brothers, get dressed. But now they're walking out the street in their pajamas. Okay, so, you know, that's the whole thing. My dad said, you get up, you get washed, you get dressed, you put on some clothes. Go out the street with headscarves and any kind of, no, you don't do that. And I think all of those little things made a difference. It may seem like it's little, and it don't matter, but you take a lot of little things and drop them to the wayside, and you wind up with nothing. And that's what we got.
That's
what we got. We constantly hear about Fifth Street, Fifth Street, Fifth Street. Everything that has happened on Fifth Street didn't involve anybody that lived on Fifth Street. Okay? It wasn't us that was on Fifth Street. It was somebody else bringing their garbage from where they lived to where we lived. But back in the day, there would be men that would take the stand and say, wait a minute, this ain't happening. It ain't happening. So until we get back, no matter what color you are, to start caring about each other and really care. And I've learned these last 6 months that people care. I'm up in Albany and my house is being renovated. But I have neighbors that will text me and say this and that is happening. I got neighbors that will call my son and say, oh, your alarm is going off. Mm-hmm. If that wasn't happening, there'd be a lot of mess going on. Mm-hmm. My neighbors care. until we start caring. And you never don't have to be the person next door to you.
That's right. That's right.
Okay? They don't have to be the person next door to you. It could be the person, any person in Hudson. Walk through Hudson. Because if I see you hungry and you're not from Hudson and I feed you, I'm just not your neighbor as that person that lives next door to you.
And I want to tell you something that Ms. Toni Kross left out that's very important. Ms. Toni Kross is the second African American person to be on the Common Council of Hudson.
All right.
Where was it? It's a few doors down from City Hall.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming down.
Second black on the city council, on the county council. I wonder what year that was, and who your predecessor was, who was the first.
Joette Bell was there first.
Okay.
People of color didn't get elected to the 90s here.
I hear that.
Isn't that something? That's why you had to have a club like the CC Club. You understand?
Okay. I had to know what segregated schools here too at one time.
Were there segregated schools here?
Not while I was here.
No.
There was a bunch of schools, and I guess if you want to say segregated, the only thing that was divided was by where you lived at. But there was just, in fact, the schools, as kids we used to say, they had a checkerboard system. You had white, black. Because you didn't get more than three or four blacks in a class. And if you had more than three or four, they labeled it the bad kids. Oh yeah, that's the way it was. I don't know about segregated schools.
The whole time I was in school, it was not segregated. St. Mary's. Well, St. Mary's was Catholic. No, I went to school one year here in 1948, sixth grade. And I came from a Catholic school in Brooklyn run by Franciscan brothers. Coming to Hartford to go to school was a relief for me. As a matter of fact, I had the same teacher my mother had when she was a child. And I found the 1 year I was here, according to my peers and my classmates and my friends who lived here, they never complained about being mistreated because of the color of their skin. They were getting an education. They took whatever it was about a teacher who may have been a bit grouchy, not to be about a race issue, but a personality or anything. You know? So no, I can say no. It wasn't the one that.
Well, that didn't start happening until like the '70s. The '70s when they started having riots and they started having protests from the hill, and it just started moving on.
Yeah, you know, one other thing.
Hold on, Tiffany.
Yes.
One other thing I forgot to mention. When people came here from the South as migrant workers during the late 40s, 50s, and 60s, they went back home and came back the following year. And then the jobs began to decrease. The major thing that happened, I believe, in my experience again, the way I experienced it, they missed the civil rights movement in the South. They missed it by coming here to Hudson and upstate New York. So they had no sense of black being beautiful or black being anything but second class. They came to Hudson where there was no damn civil rights movement. Okay? So they totally missed, a generation missed that whole experience of being able to identify with feeling that they are important as anybody else. We wouldn't be having these, what's that slogan that we're using? I don't even remember it. What is it? Black what? What is it? Black Lives Matter. What bullshit, okay? It's always mattered to most of us, I think. But what happened was you did not have the experience where your black life mattered when you came to Hudson. And you missed it by leaving the South. There are black mayors all over the South and have been there for years and years and years. You ain't never going to see a black mayor in this room. Okay?
That's right.
Well, we'll see.
just now, you know, I hear a lot of rumbling in the audience because, you know, what he said, it's true. You know, the era that he comes from, you know, they stood up. I'm black and I'm proud. You know, they had those dance halls. They had those get-togethers, those barbecues, where they welcomed all people, but they encouraged one another. And that's what's missing today. And others are taking advantage of black people today. And that's why we scream out as a younger generation, Black Lives Matter. Okay? And I know I heard something about riots happen. Can you tell us a few about that? And I hope you all are hungry because we have a delicious menu. Thanks to Miss Annette right there, Miss Annette Perry. All right, now. Annette. Can you talk about the riots, and then we're going to close out with Miss Emma, and I want you all to get ready to eat.
Well, there was one riot that I remember. We was in high school, and I think the teachers were on strike. So,
the year was 1970.
And I remember wanting to go home because there was stuff rumbling. You knew it was getting ready to happen. And I went and they told us anybody that would go home was going to be suspended. And I said, well, y'all just going to have to suspend me because I'm going home. And I went home because I was scared. And I remember when I got home, it was on the radio that they was rioting and fighting up at the school, and there were some people that were out of school, and that they were 18, 19, and 20 that came up and was a part of it. And I knew I just didn't want to be a part of it. I wasn't fighting. I didn't care about what they were doing. My mother said, you go to school to learn. You don't go to school to fight. But that's what happened then. And then there were some riots when Martin Luther King got assassinated, yeah, but that was just on the streets. That wasn't at school. Okay. And then from there on in, they started protesting for the Hill at Montgomery C. Smith, and for us ladies to wear pants because it was cold. Those were the type of things that happened there. But that was it. That was a one-day riot.
Okay. One more question.
Was there ever an NAACP?
Yes, we had an NAACP.
Can I speak on that? I was asked by the previous president of the NAACP to assume the directorship of the NAACP, of the Hudson chapter. I got absolutely no backing in the black community here in Hudson, Virginia. The backing I got was from this woman sitting right here, and that one, Slonaker, where is she? She's sitting under there, and a couple other people, and a couple of crazy black men who thought they could use NAACP to further their own personal goals. Okay. So I pulled the plug on it, and that's been the end of it.
There was an NAACP when we were growing up, because I used to go. I remember Stanley Watkins was the secretary because he had the best handwriting. Mr. Harris was the president.
Okay. Thank you so much. Next time, can you let us know while your husband was working? You know, how was it raising your family with five girls and a boy? Right? No? How was it for you raising your children coming up from Florida?
Well, it was pretty good, but my thing, when I got up here, I got a job myself. I worked not days and my husband worked nights. So that's how we raised our kids. We both worked.
Are you all hungry?
Yes.
We have some black eyed peas, ooh, some fried chicken, sweetie, some macaroni salad. All right now. Okay. two lovely ladies. There is a donation box out front that will help support the library as well as SBK's programs and events. And I would like to take this time out for thanking you two lovely ladies for being a part of our event and giving us here a little bit of history of the Black community in Hudson. Thank you.